Hi guys, my name is Eden. I am a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, among other things. My sobriety date is 4/20/2019, ironically. I just woke up that day and decided I wanted to flush my dope and didn't want to do it anymore. Where do I start? I was born in Torrance, California, Thanksgiving Day, 1998, 21 years old, about to be 22. So I was born into a very loving family, but they were also very old school, and a lot of the tough love and things that they were doing didn't really work for me personally. My mom and my dad, they had a weird dynamic. My dad was very abusive to my mom. Every time she would get pregnant, she'd like leave and go to California, have a baby, wait a few years, come back, you know? And this went on for about 10 years they were together. Whenever she'd get upset, we'd just pack our shit and move. I remember officially staying put in Texas when I was 6 years old. It's the first time we ever, like, I remember living in the house and actually going to a school and making friends and being stable. Growing up, I always felt like I was different than everybody else. Like, everybody had the secret to life, and I just didn't. I was just always the oddball out. Plus, I am a Californian and I live in Texas. So it's just like I was exposed to so many different things. And then, like, when I would go to school, this young girl who's like eating, I don't know, I grew up eating like tofu and stuff like that. My mom's a vegetarian. So it's like I go to school and I'm used to all these things. And then these kids from the hood are just like, what is she doing? Like, she's so weird. So I always felt like I was left out. No one really wanted to hang out with me. I was bullied a lot. I left something out. Okay, so my mom's best friend's daughter, starting from the ages of like 4 to 7, she would babysit me, and she molested me. And I can say that now. I'm comfortable with that. I've worked it out, talked about it, got over it. It's something that happened to me, but it's not happening to me anymore, if that makes sense. If you're a trauma survivor, you understand. And I repressed that memory until later, years later, I was getting high and I was like, oh, wait, that happened. But, anyway, so growing up, yeah, I was very different from other people. When my mom and dad got divorced, I never was really taught what a healthy relationship was. I grew up really strict. My grandparents were Jehovah's Witnesses, so I wasn't really exposed to too much. Like, I didn't know what the real world was. I lived in this fantasy world where everyone was good, and if they didn't do what we did, then they were bad. And that's just how I grew up. When my mom and dad divorced, I was exposed to a lot. She always had different boyfriends. She was an alcoholic. You never knew what you were going to get from her. She was something. So I remember her just having a lot of different boyfriends and things like that every like year or so. I remember too, by the time I got to middle school, it got to the point where I was afraid to have friends over because I didn't know once we walked through that door and walked home from school how she was going to be. I remember one time I went to have a sleepover and I told her, hey, I want friends to sleep over. We're going to do this and that. And she was like, oh, okay, fine. I come home and I'm like, okay, let me check on my mom and then we can, you know, play and play or whatever. Come inside, my mom's just like, fuck, passed out, naked on the couch, you know, and I'm just like, you know what, guys, it's canceled. Like, I gotta take care of my mom. And that went on for a long time. I remember I had my first drink. By the time I was 12, I knew how to make drinks. I was like my mom's little bartender and she would let me taste them and, you know, and I remember the first time I got drunk, it was like a mixed wine. I think I was like 13 years old. And I liked the feeling and I liked pretending to not be drunk around my family. Like, I don't know. It was just really exciting for me. I don't know why. And from there, it fucking took off. By the way, a little disclaimer. There is a lot of like violence and sexual trauma in this story. I'm just letting y'all know, but this is my story, so I'm going to share it and tell it the way that I remember it. So I remember when I was like think I was like 13 the first time I ever smoked weed. I remember it was like after volleyball practice, and I did it and I got high, and like people wanted to hang out with me, and I had something in common with people. I just wasn't like the weird black girl anymore. I had friends now. And so I remember just smoking. After then, I was a pothead, smoked weed every day. From there, with less than a year, it progressed to Xanax. I don't know how many times I've overdosed on Xanax accidentally. And, you know, that to me, that wasn't a sign that it was a problem. I was like, oh, I'm just having fun. I'm just having fun. I would skip school. I would do really crazy things. I would skip school, steal things. You know, my life just kind of started spiraling after then. I also remember, my mom being really, really drunk all the time, like I said. And so it was easy for me to steal her bottles and her weed and put it in a backpack and act like I was going to school and just go to my friend's house and skip all day and get fucked up. That's what I like to do. At 15, I also tried cocaine for the first time. I was with friends and we were with these other guys, and they brought it out, and I was just, like, kind of nervous. I've never done this before, but of course, you know, I'm like, oh, I'll try anything once. Like, it's just fun. I'm young, you know, it's fuck it, let's do it. So I did it, and I was instantly hooked. I did cocaine for a while, and it was almost every day. That's when I started stealing money from my parents, running away from home. Me and my mom stopped getting along. She didn't understand why I was running away, and we would get into these altercations. And I remember that summer, I was either in and out of juvie or just away from home partying with friends all the time. My mom said that void that I didn't know how to fill was finally being filled. Add boys into the mix, and it was just, I was having the time of my life. I remember, I think it was like 14 too, I had a really bad overdose on Xanax. I don't remember much. All I remember is that I was with friends. Next thing you know, I'm waking up in the hospital. My grandma's over me, and she's like, oh, you're awake, you know, oh, like, I'm so happy. And I didn't know who she was. I didn't recognize her. So I just started cussing her. I'm like, why are you in my fucking face? And just fucking cussing her out. Then I blacked out again. I was in a coma for 3 days. And that still didn't stop me. I just remember just partying a lot that year, and just really, my group of friends wasn't a very good one. And it went like that for a while, just running away and stuff and in and out of juvie. I would always just like make up lies like, oh, mom, my friend, her mom said I could spend the night, or oh, this and that, knowing damn well we're going to be getting, their parents let us drink, we're going to be getting drunk in the room, we're going to be smoking and all this stuff. I was a very rebellious kid. So next year, 15, that was the very first time I tried meth. I was on cocaine a lot. That was my thing. I like to do coke. And I remember I was out on the streets. I had like basically almost just like, don't come back here. Like, you're doing too much. Don't come back here. And so I was just out on the streets. So he just sent me to go live with my dad. But my dad really, he never really showed me any affection and love. Like, it was instilled in me at a young age to just go to school and work and you'll be successful. Like, I remember very vividly when I would go visit California as a kid, my grandpa would drive down. We'd go shopping or do whatever, you know, with our grandparents. And then, like, before we went back home, he always made sure to go drive down Skid Row and be like, hey, you know, this is where you're going to be if you don't do this and do that. And if you're not successful, like, success is a very big thing in my family, just having education and stuff like that. And I was a very smart girl. So they thought I was their golden child. I was going to be the one. So when I started doing drugs and rebelling, they were very confused and they didn't understand. And it was just a lot of pressure to put on someone so young. I remember being 6 and then like gifted and talented and stuff and doing all these tests and getting all these awards, and it just became a lot of pressure over time. So flash back to when I was 15, I think it was, I've been in and out of mental hospitals for like a long time because of overdoses and threatened suicide and a whole bunch of other stuff. I had a lot going on. And I remember I had tried meth for the first time. This woman was like, well, hey, you're, you know, let's hang out. And so I was like, okay, we're hanging out. I got to know her really well. We were always on the streets together, and I seen what she did. She was a sex worker, and I was like, oh, no, I'll never do that. And I remember I thought everybody was my friend, and I went to this guy's house, and he bought me all this stuff, and, you know, he was really nice to me, and I ended up getting sexually abused. I got raped. I was only 14 or 15 years old. That changed me forever. I remember just being like, I don't really care. So a couple of days later, she's like, hey, you know, you like coke, this is better than coke, try this. And so I tried it, and I was in love. Meth was my real first love. I felt like I could do anything. I could talk to anyone, people liked me. And I just really felt like on that drug, I could be myself. With that and the alcohol, I felt like that was it. That's what I needed. That's the key to life. And so I did that for a while. But anyways, the woman ended up trafficking me. And this went on for like 2 years. But I was still in that rebellious state, so I didn't realize what was going on. So I'm like, yeah, I'm not talking to my family. Fuck my family. They don't want me to do this. They don't want me to do that. I don't want to be like that, this perfect person that they want me to be. I'm going to do this. And I'm doing this stuff, you know, not realizing that she's just doping me up and just putting me in a hotel room. Like, I didn't care. As long as I had something to eat and I had dope and I had a place to lay my head, I didn't care what happened to me. I was already gone. And that went on for 2 years. And then I came back home. I finally just was like, fuck it. You know, I'm going to just go back home. So I went back home and I got sent to another mental hospital because my mom, she didn't know what was going on with me. She was an alcoholic, but she, in our family, we don't really have many addicts, so she didn't know what was going on, what to do, throwing me in mental hospitals. And I remember the mental hospital was like, hey, we're gonna send you to treatment. Now 16-year-old me, I was like, what the fuck, I don't need to go to rehab, I'm just a teenager. I didn't even know they had rehabs for young adults. I'm like, yeah, this is over. So I was so upset, and I got sent there. Got sent to a rehab in Dallas. I was sent to two rehabs in Dallas. I ran from both of them because I was just like, no, I don't want to do this. And I remember, though, very vaguely there were meetings, but I didn't know what those were. And I was like, why are these people coming to talk to us? I have a problem. I don't know. So I was just there to like lay my head and get some food. And then once I was good, I'd find a way to sneak out and run away. So I lived in Dallas for about on my own for about maybe a year here. I wasn't being trafficked anymore, but I was still doing sex work because that's really all I knew how to do. I didn't have any skills because I didn't want to go to school anymore. I wanted to just be on the streets and do drugs. So I kept doing that. So I met this guy and I tried to seem really cool to him and all this other stuff. And he broke up with me. He was like, you're not what he basically broke my self-esteem. He was just like, oh, you're nothing. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. Other girls are doing this and that, and you're not doing it right. And all this other stuff. And I was just heartbroken. And, you know, I do what I do best. I get high and I move around. And I found another person to live with, another guy. And I lived at his house, and basically I was getting trafficked again. And I thought I was doing it on my own will. But when someone doesn't feed you or basically withhold stuff from you, basic needs, because you're not doing what you want them to do, basically you're their prisoner. That was a very abusive relationship. It was my first abusive relationship. I remember getting dragged on my hair. I still have a scar to this day. It's in the middle of my head. He pulled my hair out, dragged me, beat the crap out of me. And I was just terrified of him. So scared to leave. And I didn't know what to tell my parents, like, because they were so worried about me. But I tried to make it seem like, yeah, I'm not at home, but I'm fine. You know? And, this went on for like a year and a half, just me like just trying to make, you know. And I called my mom finally, and I was just like, hey, everything's not okay. This guy's beating me up. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm on drugs. Like, I need to go home.
So I went home, and what do? When I feel broken, I get in a relationship, try to have someone fix me. So I got in a relationship again with this guy, but this time I'm busting. And I told him, like, after we've been dating for a couple months, I told him everything that happened, and when they fight, he'd be like, "Oh, you're a whore, and I can't have sex with you anymore. I can smell the guys you've been with," and all this just horrible stuff. Like, "Oh, because you're such a drug addict," but you know, he did drugs with me. But he was like, "Oh, you're such a drug addict. Do this, do that." And I don't know. I just kept searching for something, and I didn't even know what I was searching for at this point. Like, it was just, I was just going basically. I don't know what kept me going, but something kept me going. I kept looking for something, and I remember I was still partying, still going home, running away from home and stuff. And I found a way to do drugs at home, which is not good, but you know, I did. I found a way to do drugs like at home where my mom wouldn't know. And I didn't understand what constantly getting in because she didn't understand my mood swings and everything. And it was because, you know, I was on dope really bad. I was really skinny and just living a hard life. And I remember, I think this time I was like 17 when I met my son's dad. I was just going over there to like chill with friends, with guys, of course. I like to be around guys because they make me feel good about myself when I feel shitty. So chilling with friends or whatever. And I remember, like, we met briefly, and it really didn't mean anything to me. I was just like, okay, you know, whatever person. And then I started coming over there a lot, you know, because, I mean, that's where the drugs were. And I remember I would help him, like, sell his weed and everything, and eventually we got close, and he took me out to California with him to just take a trip, and I thought that was, like, really something. I'm like, oh, this older guy is taking me to go do this, this, and that. Like, oh, he must really like me, and I felt loved, and I felt appreciated, and he took me out to California, saw my family and everything, and my mom, I guess, contacted one of his friends, and they're like, oh, do you know that she's a runaway and this, this, and that, and he was like, oh, hell no. So I went home. And I ended up, I was home for literally like a week, and I started feeling symptoms, and I found out I was pregnant with my son. And to this day, I feel like if that didn't happen, I wouldn't be here right now with the way that I was living. I know that something would have happened, something bad. I either would have overdosed, or I would have been dead in a ditch somewhere because of the people that I was around. So I was pregnant with my son. He catches wind of it. He's happy. He moves in after a couple of months, and we go through it together. This is my second abusive relationship. I remember it started small. Like, he would punch me in my leg, or, like, you know, just little things. I'm like, oh, it's not a big deal. He was just really mad. And then once my son was born, he turned into a totally different person. He was such a monster. I remember... it was just hectic, and this went on for about three years of my life. Just moving, he's from San Antonio, so just moving back and forth from Austin to San Antonio with him, chasing him everywhere, bringing my son along for the ride. He's in my life, he's out my life. It was just very hectic and very chaotic and unmanageable. And I loved him, and I just wanted my family, and that was my focus. I wasn't thinking about, oh, my son needs this and that, or I need to find a job. I'm just like, no, I'm gonna follow him wherever he goes. So. I mean, I followed him for a long time, and I ended up getting an apartment in San Antonio and having a job for a little bit. I got off of meth, but I wasn't clean. I was still doing pills and smoking weed, but I thought I was a good mom because I kept a roof over my son's head. And I just remember going to work with, like, black eyes, two black eyes, busted lips, trying to cover it up with makeup, pretend like I'm happy. And be like, oh, I'm not these other girls out here. Like, my son's dad is with me. But, like, at what cost? I remember one time I was so messed up. And he had cheated on me. And I remember I was so messed up. I was so messed up that day. And I remember my son, he was sick. He needed to go to the doctor. And so I called his dad. And I was like, hey, you need to come back over here. He's sick. So he came back. And I only did that so I could fuck with him. And I slashed the tires to his car that he stole from me behind my back. It's a whole other story for another time. But
And we got into it, and he beat my ass in the parking lot. And I remember that day, I was done. I was done with that situation. I was just like, I don't want to be with you anymore. I don't want to live like this. I deserve better. But you know what I do when I'm broken? I get with another guy. So after I'm done with my son's dad and I'm going through that, I don't even give myself time to grieve. And at my job, this girl I work with, her brother, just I don't know why he was there. And I would talk to him and we'd smoke together and he'd come over and it was just great until my job, I don't know where my money went, but it wasn't going to the right places. It was going to drugs, of course. And he was like, oh, well, we're going to do this and that. So he was like, so we can make money. So I started selling drugs. I started stripping in San Antonio. I started doing everything but actually trying to get a better job so I can keep a roof over our heads. And I couldn't keep the apartment because I was so caught up in that lifestyle. And what I did was I gave my son my mom. And I was like, Mom, I can't do this. I can't take care of him right now. Could you just hold him for a couple of months so I'm able to get myself together? Because by this time, I had no lights on in my house. The electric bill was way overdue and way high. And I was just like, I can't do this. Looking back at it now, I think that, I mean, even though I wasn't in the right headspace, I think I made the right decision. So I let her keep him. And instead of me doing what I have to do to find another place or, you know, just do the next right thing, I abandoned the apartment and I ended up moving hotel to hotel with him, just stripping, living that life. So drugs and stuff, because that was exciting to me. Like, I never really got a chance to be a kid or not be a kid, but just... I got pregnant very young, so him not being there, I was like, oh, yeah, it's time to party, you know? Didn't click in my mind, oh, get your shit together. So I was just out partying with him, and that was another very toxic relationship. He ended up beating me, too, because he would tell me to go do things but get mad when I went to go do them. And like I said, I mean, like, since I was about 15 years old, all I was doing was sex work, so that's all I really knew. And that's how I survived. That's the honest truth. And so I was doing that, living hotel to hotel, doing dope. And by this time, I think I'm like 19 or maybe barely 20. I think it was barely 20 years old. And I remember I don't know, at some point I was like, I would have moments of clarity where I was like, hey, maybe I should stop doing this. And I stopped doing meth for like 3 days. And then I'd come down and just be like, no, fuck that. I can't do this, you know? I remember being so scatterbrained where I couldn't, like, I would get kicked out of hotels and I would have to call people to help me pack my shit because I just couldn't focus. I couldn't get it. And that's when I started getting miserable. This was the lowest point of my life. I just remember just being like just so broken, you know. I just had nothing and I was on the streets, and I was still in San Antonio. So at this time I called my son's dad. I was talking to him every day and I would be like, hey, can I come stay with you? Hey, I just need a place to stay. Like, hey, I need help. And he wouldn't help me. He'd be like, oh, you got yourself into this situation. Get yourself out. And that really hurt because it's like the one person who I thought would, always be there regardless of what we've been through. He was just like, I don't want anything to do with you. And that should have been my bottom, but it wasn't. So I remember, I think in February I came back to Austin. I remember I got left in Austin. Actually, I didn't come back to Austin on my own free will. I remember he like basically abandoned me in Austin, the guy I was with at the time, and was like, I can't fucking do this anymore. You stay here. I go down there. So I was like, okay, whatever. So I went back to my mom's house, and I was there for a little while. I was coming off of dope, so you know how that is. Very irritable, very grouchy, very hungry. And I had this great idea, like, hey, let me steal my mom's credit card so I can get a room and I can go back to San Antonio and I can keep doing what I was doing. And so I tried to do that. My mom found out and we got into an altercation. and it was in front of my son, unfortunately. So I'd walked way across town to my grandma's house, and I remember sleeping on my grandma's couch once I got there. And I remember waking up to APD telling me, Miss Miller, put your hands behind your back. You're going to jail. They had caught the cops on me. At the time, I was so upset, and I remember crying in the back of the cop car. I was like, I want to go to treatment, because I'd been so many times, but I really didn't want to get clean, but I was just trying to get out of that situation. I was like, I want to go to rehab. And I was crying, and he was like, well, ideally you would go. He was like, but you did put your hands on your mom and on your grandpa, and you left marks, so you have to go to jail. So here I am in jail with two assault charges. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, how did I get here? I never thought I'd end up in jail. Even with all the shit that I was doing, I thought I was Miss Badass because I'd never been to jail. And like, oh, I don't steal. I don't do that. Like, I'm a good drug addict. I don't do that. You know, I might sleep with your man and steal your dope, but I don't do those other things. I don't go to jail. And so I went to jail. And in there, I was just like, I don't know. I was just like, why the fuck am I here? And I wanted to get out so bad. And the only experience I could really remember from jail, this was my first spiritual experience. I remember I went to church there, and I was like, I just went because there was nothing to do. And I remember they told the story of Rahab, the prostitute, and she did all this stuff, but because she hit these spies or whatever, she was in the bloodline of Jesus. I'm not religious, but that story spoke to me because I'm like, hey, maybe I do have a chance, you know, like maybe I can redeem myself. So, but and I wish jail was that time was my bottom too, going to jail, but it wasn't. I remember I opened up a CPS case on myself because I was honestly desperate at the time, and I was like, hey, I need some help. And I was like, I need some help. I'm on drugs. I just need help. I don't want to do this. So I had like kind of a moment of clarity in there. But what I do when I got out, went back to the same guy, because there's always the guys. And I went out and I went out back out again. I remember I was home for like a day. And that night I called him to come get me. And I left my son sleeping in the bed, and I didn't tell my mom where I was going. And I remember. And I remember that night so vividly because that was the first night I shot dope. And that's when I kind of knew, like, this is it. Like, I'm going to die this way. And I was like, this is my, because I didn't know what recovery was. I didn't know what that looked like. I thought you were either addicted to drugs or you weren't. And so I started shooting dope. I started doing more and more of what I was doing. And it got to the point where, like, I remember I was so in love with this guy who was my dealer, and I remember he was married, and I remember just that being my bottom, him just not wanting to talk to me anymore because of her, and just this whole, it was this whole thing where, like, I thought I had the money, and I thought I was cute, and I'm a stripper, and I do this, and I do that, and it's so dope, I'm so cool, but it was just that night where he was just like, I can't call you anymore, don't fucking call me, and I was in my room by myself, smoking dope, watching TV, just crying, bawling. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I remember my lawyer, she had called me, and she told me about Family House, the Family House program and everything. And I was like, okay, maybe that's something I can do, you know? And so I remember I kept calling rehabs. I kept calling Austin Recovery. I kept trying to get in. I was just like really at my lowest. Like, there was nothing to do but smoke dope, and I was so tired of it, but I didn't have anything else to do. Like, I was just so sick and tired of it. And I remember Matt in admissions calling me, and I'm just telling this poor man my life story, all scatterbrained, and he's just like, I'm just calling to see if you still want the bed. And I'm just like, yeah, but this is something that is going on, and my life is a mess, and I can't do this, and oh my God, they're going to take my son. And he's just like, but do you want the bed? And he ended up hanging up on me because he could just not hold a conversation. I was just too fucked up. And so I remember going back to Austin at some point. I had called one of these guys I was talking to. He had gave me a ride back to Austin. And I was in Austin for a little bit, for a couple of days. And then, of course, money calls, and I'm just like, hey, I want to go do that now. So I go do that, and and I'm just like, okay, I'm doing, okay, I'm going to go do this. But I was so sick. I didn't have any dope. I was so, so sick. So just like, oh, hey, I can go back there and get dope because I don't know where any dope is, but I'm going to go back there and get my last piece. This is just my last one, my last one. So I go do that. Let me see where I'm on time. Okay. So I go do that, and I'm just like, all right, cool. I do that. I get so sick. And I remember the next day, I'm in the shower. My phone keeps ringing. My friends are calling me in foster recovery. And it's Vicky telling me they have a bed ready for me. And I was just elated. I was like, oh, my God, I don't have to do this anymore. So I get to treatment. As soon as they open the door, it's like, I'm ready. In my experience with treatment, I take it serious the first video. I was just like, fuck this, you know, I've done this before, whatever, what's going to be different than the other times? But then, I don't know, something happened to me. I just had an experience, and I just prayed to the universe. That's my higher power. And I was just like, hey, man, like, I'm here. I don't know what to do. I'm crying. I'm like, I've been through all this shit, and I don't want to do it anymore. And I remember, I don't know, but the more I stayed there, the more I became willing. And the more I was just like, hey, you know, this might be, it might could work. But the first 2 weeks, I was like, no. And then I heard Elizabeth's story, and her story was kind of like mine. And I was like, hey, maybe I can do this. If she could get sober, then I can get sober, you know? And I latched on to her state. And I remember staying in hospital recovery for 2 months. I begged them for an extension. I was like, I need it. I need this. And I stayed, I got out, and I immediately got on like 90 and 90, hitting meetings all the time, working my steps. My step one experience, I was already knew I was powerless, already knew I had a problem. I didn't have any problem admitting that. My step two experience, I had a little trouble with, but I've always been different, the different one in my family. I'm like, well, I want to believe what I want to believe. So I always believe like, in the whole universe, just one thing, the infinite being, the divine one. I believe in that type of stuff. So I was like, okay, maybe that can work. So I just started fucking looking up and just praying. And I started noticing things like, oh, there's clouds in the sky. There's trees. There's a breeze. Like, oh, there's more to life than getting high. Like, I like, really remember getting excited about there being clouds in the sky at one point. We were cloud watching in rehab. And I was like, oh my God, like I never stopped and realized how cool this fucking is. And, my step three experience, I do step three every day. I'm not going to lie. I surrender every day because it's so easy for me to just go back to my own will and just try to do the Eden show, try to just run it on my own. And, you know, every time I do that, it just does not work. And I wonder why I'm having so much anxiety and why I'm freaking out and why the world is ending. And I'm just like, oh, but did I pray? No. So That's difficult, kind of difficult for me, and I still do that. My step four experience, I just really, like, I sat there and I did it in a week. I cried. It was hard to get through, but I got through it. And I'm lucky that I have two sponsors. I'll get to that later, but I'm lucky that my first sponsor, she was really there for me. She, has experience with SLAA and all that. So I was really able to talk to her about like everything I was going through. And it was I felt a big relief because I didn't have to carry that shit with me anymore. It was just all on paper. I can put it to the side, throw it away. And I was getting used to living life sober. 6 and 7. Oh my God. So I was sober, but I didn't realize that I was still acting the same way. I was still acting out and doing some of the same things that I used to do. Cause I mean, that's all I knew. And, that was a wake up call for me. I'm like, oh, so I can't be a bitch to everyone that doesn't agree with me and still say I'm sober. So I started, working 6 and 7, Red Drop the Rock, and it changed my life. That was my second spiritual experience. I was just like, man, this shit fucking works. Like I just started becoming so, that's when I started meditating a lot more too. I'm really big into meditation and spirituality now. It's like, it's really all I do. it's what keeps me sane. So flash forward, like, I guess into this August, I got my son back finally after a little over a year of fighting. They were like, oh, well, we can't say no to you anymore. Like, you're always clean and you're always doing what you're supposed to. So here you go. And that just made my, I'm about to cry. That made it all worth it for me. Like, just kicking the dope in treatment, not wanting to be there, fucking just everything that I went through. It made it worth it because I mean, I got sober to get him back, but I stayed sober because of the people that I have found. I found my real true family. I've never had true friends before. I've made lifelong friends in this program that I know we're going to stay friends for a very long time. I imagine us being all old, talking shit about the young people when we get older, because these are my real friends. I can be myself, and it's so relieving to just finally be myself and live the life that I want to live unapologetically, because I was so scared to do that for so long and putting on this character. Let's see, 8, 9, 11, and 12, I did my amends. I was scared to do this one to my best friend that I was using with, and I did it. And now I'm currently helping her get sober. And to me, that is a big thing, because she was, I'm not here to judge her, but she was like me, maybe worse. And that is a big thing for me. And now I'm helping her get into treatment. And that is one of the most rewarding things like I've ever experienced, just helping someone be there, because you know what it feels like. And it's like, hey, you don't have to live like that anymore. Like, come over here to this side. I'm taking other women through the steps. That's rewarding too, seeing the light bulb come on in their heads and knowing that they don't have to live that life anymore. It's just very exciting to me, because I never knew that I could actually be happy. I'm finally happy. I mean, I have shitty days, but I'm happy because I know there's a solution and I know things will pass and it's not just woes me anymore. And if there's nothing you take from my, story, you're not your trauma. You are not your trauma. You can overcome that shit. I'm not burning, but I'm further than where I was 17 months ago. And for that, I'm truly grateful. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Eden, that was amazing.
It was.
Thank you so much.
I love you, Eden.
Eden, you're a miracle. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Such courage.
Oops.